your participation in this service this morning. It's wonderful what a good night's rest will do for all of us, isn't it? I hope you got a good night's rest. I know some of you are having a problem doing that because you're enjoying visiting and staying up late in the evenings, but I'm glad that you're here in the mornings and we can enjoy these meetings together. I've had a lot of suggestions for my throat. My pockets are full of home remedies, and I have advice that you wouldn't believe. Now, I really don't have a sore throat, but I've just gotten hoarse, and that happens every time I come to Plainview. But it happens when I get tired, and I suppose I was tired yesterday, and I had a little more problem last night than I've been having, but I did get a good night's rest, and things are better, and hopefully they'll continue to be better as the meeting progresses. Many of you know that several years ago I just had a lot of throat problems, and evidently a lot of it was caused from allergies, and I've done some things that have helped my allergies, and I can't believe in the past 3 years I've had little or no throat problems at all until I come to Plainview and then I get hoarse. Things are a little different here, and we're grateful for that little difference and for the many things that we're able to enjoy here. The good crowds, and you know, I think speakers just have a tendency to get excited and maybe talk harder and longer and louder than they would ordinarily. We appreciate your being here this morning, especially our young people. And we have announced from time to time that our subject today would have to do with the responsibilities of children in the home. And if I can today, without using too much time, I want to talk from the very smallest children on up to young adults. And there are many things in our study this morning that will apply to those of you and me as parents and grandparents as well. So hopefully the study will be beneficial and helpful to us all. I want you to be aware right in the very beginning that I have a lot of confidence in our young people. I don't hold the philosophy that many people hold in the world today, that our young people are all bad and they're the ruination of our nation, of our country, and of the world. I just don't believe that at all. And many of the ill reports and the unpleasant things that we hear about young people on the news is only a very small portion of the young people of America. And I just want to tell all of you little boys and girls today, you young men and women, that I have a lot of confidence in you. I have trust in you, and we are depending upon you to make a difference in the young people of our nation. And I hope that you'll never let us down in doing that. We have the confidence that you will, and I think we can depend upon you for that. Now, as you take your place in your homes and in your families, I told you yesterday morning that I would mention some things that you could expect as children of that home, and I think you have a right to do that. I think your parents have a great deal of responsibility, and they owe a great debt of gratitude for having you in their homes, and they're responsible to provide for you and to give you things that other people are not responsible for. As an example, in that home, you have a right to demand food and clothing and shelter and the material needs that you must have to sustain and keep your lives. There are many things now for which you are not responsible. First of all, you're not responsible for who your parents are. And right away, some one of you is going to say, well, you know, I'm happy with my parents. Well, I was too. But see, I had no control over that, whatever. You had no control over who your parents are. And I hope that you have great parents and that you're happy in the homes where you live. But this was something you had no control over. You had no control over the time and the place of your birth. You had nothing to do with when you were born or where you were born or to whom you were born. And don't feel like that you ought ever to have any guilt complex about that, regardless of the circumstances that might develop in your home. You're not responsible for that. You're not responsible for many of your physical characteristics. Someone might walk up to me and say, well, you know, Brother Teal, you're not a very handsome man. And right away, I'd just lay that onto my ancestry because I'm not responsible for all of that. Now, I would be responsible for my appearance and the way that I kept myself groomed and dressed. I'd have some responsibility there. But, you know, many physical characteristics we're not responsible for. It's very often said that young men, if you want to know what your girlfriend or your wife is going to look like when she gets older, look at her mother. And that's not always true, but that has a general application, and we inherit many traits from our families. You're not responsible for that. There's a lady over in Cordell, Oklahoma, that almost every time that I see her, just about without exception, she'll say, you know, Truman, every time I see you, you remind me more of your dad. I guess there's something about my physical makeup, maybe it's the color of my hair, that reminds her of my father. Well, that's going to be true. People have said since we've come here, we have three of our grandchildren with us. Someone said to me this morning, when I saw the two girls, I didn't have any problem knowing to whom they belonged. You know why? They favor their mother. But see, these are things for which we're not responsible. But the very fact now that we have been born, that we have been placed in a home, we are responsible for what we make out of our lives. You have the right to be wanted and to be loved. Unfortunately, as we mentioned yesterday morning, there are children in America that are not wanted. And there are children that are not loved. I couldn't imagine that there is one child, one little boy or girl, one young man or woman in this assembly today that is not wanted or loved by their parents. And I'm not going to say too much about that. But you have a right to expect that, and you ought to. And I hope that's a blessing that you enjoy in your home. Number two, you have a right to expect a Christian home. And again, I want to say to every father and mother in this audience, we need to provide that for our children. There's not a greater blessing, there's not a greater heritage than that we could leave to our children than the privilege to be brought up in a Christian home. There's a difference. There's a difference in a Christian home and many of the homes that are in America. And our children need that. And they ought to be blessed with that kind of home where they can be taught the truth, where they can learn about God, where they can learn about their relationship to other people, and where they can grow up as Jesus did, mentally in wisdom, physically in stature, religiously in favor with God and socially in favor with man. That's the way that Jesus grew up, and we ought to give our children the opportunity to have those same blessings. And I think I can say to our children today, you have a right to expect that in the home where you live. You know, I believe your parents are going to look after you in a mental and physical and social way, and hopefully they will provide for your spiritual needs as well. Young people, in the homes where you live, you have the right to be understood. Once in a while I'll hear parents say, well, you know, I just don't understand my children. And that creates a problem sometimes. And I'm sure that there are things that come up. Children come up with ideas, and maybe they develop habits, and maybe they develop attitudes that we really don't understand. But I believe that our children have a right to be understood in the homes where they live because they have a mind, they can think, and we as parents and grandparents need to respect that. They need to be treated like human beings and not as puppets. They need to be heard. They need to be considered. And as we mentioned in Hebrews 10, verse 24, let us consider one another and provoke unto love and good works. We need to consider that the problems of our children are just as important as the problems we have. Did you know their problems are just as real to them as your problems are to you? And you better not ignore them. Because if you do, you're destroying, at least in part, some things that that child needs when they're brought up in training and the nurture and admonition of the Lord in the home. If they have a problem, deal with it. Now, we mentioned the other morning that sometimes children ask questions when they already know the answers, and that's especially in young children. But this is a time when you as a parent need to have patience and long sufferings and deal with the child in a Christian-like way. But you know, as they grow a little older, they're going to develop problems and they're going to have questions that really need to be solved and answered. Now, the best thing for you to do is not to ignore those problems, but to address them. And I think that the children in our home have the right to expect that you and I, as their parents, would address those problems. Answer their questions. Help them to overcome things that are a problem for them. And this is where we talked yesterday about some of the things that people need to be taught. They need to be guided. They need to be counseled. They need to have instruction. They need to have example. And the children in our home have a right to expect to have parents, not just a guardian, but a companion. I doubt if there is anything more beautiful than a mother and her companionship with her daughter. And the relationship that they enjoy. I'm talking about a good relationship. Or the same thing is true with a father and his son. And young people today, you need to come to expect that in your homes. And if you haven't done the things that you need to do to draw close to your mothers or your fathers, you ought to do that. Not only do they need to learn to pal with you, you need to learn to pal with them. And they have some strength, and they have counsel, and they have advice, and they have companionship that you need. And don't refuse to allow them to give you that. I held a meeting in Bethany, Oklahoma, a number of years ago, and during the course of that meeting, I talked about some of these things, and I mentioned that Stella and I had had the opportunity to grow up with our children. We married early, and our children came along pretty early, and I said, you know, I think it's one of the best things that ever happened to us, that we had the privilege of growing up with our children. After the services, a lady came to me at the back of the building and she said, Truman, are your children here tonight? And I said, yes, they are. They were teenagers then. And she said, you know, if you grew up with them, I think I'd like to meet them. And I said, I'd like for you to meet them. I'd just love for you to. And she couldn't understand why I said that we had the opportunity to grow up with our children. But I think every father and mother knows here today that parents do just about as much growing up when they're raising a family as the children do, right? And probably every one of us think today that we've grown up enough that we could do a whole lot better job raising our children. Now, if we had the opportunity to start all over again, we probably wouldn't, but we think we can do that because of the knowledge and the experience that we've had. But parents, you're going to learn a lot of things. And you're probably going to need to make some adjustments in your lives. But you owe your children that, and your children need to come to expect that. And that's what's going to make you a family that is bound close and near together, and you'll be able to provide for them the very things that they need. Now, not only do they learn to expect things in the home, but let me tell you, boys and girls, young men and women today, that there are a number of things that are expected of you. Number one, love. Love your parents. And remember, we have talked almost every morning about this subject of love and what it means. You need to love and respect them and learn to honor them. Of all things, bestow honor and respect upon your parents. And if you love them as you ought, it's naturally going to draw you closer and nearer to them, and it's going to cause you to appreciate them more and more. There are several things that I could list today that you ought to do as a child in the home. And regardless of your love for your children and the way that you have been treated, as a parent, you need to teach and admonish and direct them in every way that you can. But children, you need to learn to accept that as well. Don't be a rebellious person. You know, rebellion is classed with some sins that are very grievous, like the sin of witchcraft. I don't think any of us would be guilty of witchcraft, but you know, rebellion is just like that sin. 1 Samuel 15, verse 23 and 24. So don't learn to be a rebellious child, but learn to honor and appreciate the counsel and the advice of your parents. Maybe we ought to put at the top of the list the fact that we ought to know God and we ought to know His Word. Now, I don't know how many of you little boys and girls read your Bible, but I want to encourage you to do that every day. Every day. Boy, somebody said, that sounds like a pretty big chore. It's really not. It's really not that much of a chore. It's something that you ought to incorporate in your living every day. And if you begin now as a child, as you grow older, it'll just be a part of your life and you'll take care of that. Now, I'm sure there'll be days when you won't get around to reading the Bible. And you younger men and women, as you grow older, I want you to continue that and just read and read and read and study and search, because the knowledge of the Word of God will help you in so many, many things. It'll help you in the decisions that you make in your life, not only in a religious way, but in a material way as well. Children, while you're in school, there are decisions that you have to make. Sometimes you're put in a position where you have to say yes or no. Well, how are you going to know what to say? Sometimes it's hard. But I call your attention to Jesus, who was led up and tempted of Satan. And if you'll remember, in three cases when he answered him, he said, "It is written." You know, Jesus knew what to say, and he knew how to answer, because he had knowledge of what was written, and he just reminded Satan of that. "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. It is written, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. It is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve." And if you have a good knowledge and understanding the Bible, when you're put in a position where you have to say yes or no, you won't have a problem, because you'll know what is right and wrong. See, it helps you in making decisions in life as you grow older. And you begin to choose a mate, and as you establish a home, and as you make business decisions, the better knowledge you have of the Word of God, the easier it's going to be for you to make decisions all along. So by all means, study the Bible and read it and become very familiar with it. Number two, I want to encourage you to avoid bad habits. It's a lot easier to avoid a habit than it is to break one. Now, habits are easy to form. And habits are a part of our life, and I'm not critical of good habits. You know, there are certain habits that you need to have, especially in the area of personal hygiene. Things that you do every day, that ought to be a habit. It ought to be something that you do every day, like brushing your teeth and bathing and all of these good things that mother gets after you to do when you're a small child. You know, it used to be a problem for some mothers to get their boys to take a bath, Jack. You know that. That's not a problem with most people anymore. And it used to be a little more trouble, I guess, to bathe when you had to bathe in the number two wash tub and carry in water and carry out water. And we just ought to be thankful for all the blessings we have. So you see, there are habits that are good that I'm not criticizing at all, but I'm saying avoid bad habits. Little boys this morning, don't learn to curse and swear. Just don't ever let that be a part of your life. And that's habit. I think it shows a lack of ability on the part of a person to have much of a vocabulary when they have to use those kinds of words. So don't learn to take the name of the Lord in vain, and just because some other friend of yours is pretty bad to cuss, just don't start that, and then you won't have to break that habit. Don't be guilty of using so many bywords, and then you won't have to break that habit. You know, what is tolerated in this generation will be accepted in the next generation, and what's accepted in the next generation will be practiced in the next generation. You remember that. And that happens with many things, not only with habits, not only with permissiveness of so many things that we see in the world today, that happens even in leniency in the doctrine of Jesus Christ. We allow things to happen in this generation, saying we can tolerate it, it'll be permitted in the next generation, and you just watch and see, it'll be practiced in the next generation. So just don't let that be a part of your life. And I don't know why I say little boys, because I guess that's the way I got started preaching. But little girls, you don't need to do that either. And I tell you what, I hear some language coming from the lips of ladies today that just embarrasses me from the core out. And as children, if you won't learn to do that, you won't have a problem with that later on. And I'll tell you what, when people know that you don't do that, and you don't approve of the people that do, they'll use it less in your presence, and maybe reach a point to where they will not use the language at all. We had a young lady come to work for us one time. And you know, something would happen to a machine and something go wrong, and of all the noise you could hear, I couldn't believe it. And the other ladies that worked there, they did. And you know, after a few months, you didn't hear any of that coming from her at all. See, good influence affects people just like evil influence. Little boys and girls, young men and women, don't develop the habit of smoking. I'm not going to stand here today and tell people that if they smoke, they're going to go to hell. I'm not going to say that. But all of us know today many of the hazards of such a habit. First of all, it's highly expensive. And secondly, with all of the warnings that we have given everywhere that we go about how that it affects our health, why would you want to get involved in a habit like that? People say, well, you know, my granddaddy smoked and he lived to be nearly 100. I wonder how long he'd live if he hadn't smoked. And I know that some of these things, you know, tobacco is a drug, just like a lot of the other things that we heard about last Saturday. And I know that sometimes things affect different people in different ways, but there are hazards there that you don't need to get involved in, so just avoid those. Be clean. And I'm going to encourage you not to use smokeless tobacco, just like I'm going to encourage you not to smoke. It's a habit that if you don't get involved in, it's not going to bother you. But it's a habit that if you get involved in, it's going to be hard to break. It's just hard to break. And it'd be better than if you never got involved in that. Don't experience drugs. Don't experiment with alcohol. We're living in a generation that has generally accepted social drinking. I've had a lot of arguments with a number of my own brethren about social drinking, and it tears me up. I think it is the most dangerous form of drinking there is. And if you don't get in the habit of doing that, you'll never have that problem. You know, the drunk laying out there in the gutter somewhere ain't going to hurt many people. If somebody happens to come along, stumble over and fall and break an arm or something. But that socially upstanding person who has a couple of drinks under his belt and gets behind the wheel of an automobile feeling so good that he feels like that he has the automobile and the whole world in his hand. can wreak havoc and destruction that families will never outlive in their entire lives. Does it bother you that our lawmakers get together around a table and wine and dine somebody to vote in a way that they want to vote and make laws that affect every one of us? Let me tell you, young people today, there's not a sin that you or I can commit that will not affect the lives of other people. Not a one. Including this one. People say, oh, it's my life. If I want to do that, why don't you let me live it like I want to? Well, you're going to live it like you want to, but don't say that it doesn't affect anybody else. I know it's your life, but it affects other people. I was in California last year, and I called home to get the messages off of my telephone recording machine. And a voice said, Truman, this is Jim. Said, remember Jim and Nancy? Said, we're trying to get a hold of you to conduct the funeral service of our oldest daughter. She and her boyfriend the night before had met a car head on. He was on the wrong, she was on the wrong side of the road. The lady in the opposing car happened to be a lady, not a man. With a high blood alcohol level and an open container in the car. And if you think that her sin didn't affect the life of someone else, you go talk to that mother and father. You see? Just 2 or 3 weeks ago in the community near Cordell, Oklahoma, near our home, 4 teenagers out of 5 in one automobile lost their lives. Granted, they probably were driving too fast. But the man who later was arrested for DUI had gotten crossways in the highway and they ran under his automobile. Now, there's no need for me to stand here this morning and tell you about all these things that happen. They happen in your community just like they happen other places. But let me tell you, that is one of the most dangerous forms of drinking that a person can be involved in. So don't think that you can be a very tolerant person and that you can handle it when everybody else can't, because it's no good. Don't get involved in it. Don't be a part of it, and you won't have those problems. If you never develop that habit, you won't have to break it. And learn to be leaders and not followers. Just because everybody else does it, that don't mean that you have to. And we could just go on and on and on and talk about these good. Keep good company. What's your association? Have good friends. Associate with the right kind of people. You know, I always heard that if you sleep with a dog, you'll wake up with fleas. You think about that. If you associate with a flour miller, you're going to come out with some flour on you. We're going to be like the people that we associate with. A lot of men in prison today said, I just got to keep in company with the wrong crowd. Paul said, be not deceived. Evil communication corrupt good manners. That's just as true as it can be. And did you know, young men and women today, those with whom you keep company are those from whom you're going to select your companions for life. There you're going to establish your home. And look at all the problems that it could cause. So be sure that you select the right person to associate with, and then the chances are you're going to have the right companion when you get married. And we may talk about some of these things a little more tomorrow morning. I want to talk to you about why marriage has failed. And I think there are some reasons that we need to be aware of, not because you're guilty of it, but we could be sure to abstain from these and watch out for things that cause marriages to dissolve and to fail. Young men today, be careful when you select the young lady that you want to be your companion for life. You know, these are responsibilities that you're going to be bound to for a long, long time. You need to think about that. Sometimes these boys say, you know, I believe that's the prettiest girl I've ever seen. And that gets our attention. That's attractive. That's not the only criteria that you need to use in the selection of a companion. You remember reading about Samson? He saw a lady and he told his parents, said, get her for me, for she pleases me well. His parents counseled with him and said, is there not one among us? Do you have to go outside our people to find a wife? You know, he wouldn't accept that counsel. He wouldn't accept that advice. He said, get her for me, for she pleases me well. If you're that selfish, you're going to involve yourself in a lot of difficulties and problems. Don't refuse all of the advice of your father and mother. And I know that you're going to get tired and you're probably going to make a joke out of your parents saying, now, I'll tell you how it was when we were young. Some of you have already been at that, I can tell you. But sometimes that might get a little old. But do you know why they do that? Because they've had problems just like you have. You know, the complexion of these problems may have changed a little bit, but not very much. And they've been through the same things that you've been through with, or going through with. A few days ago, Stella and I was walking in the Midway Mall at Sherman, Texas. Our trailer's parked about 4 miles from there, and we did some work in that area. If it was cold, like in the winter, we could go to the mall and walk, or if it was raining, or as it turned out, the other day it's about 100 degrees, so we went down to the mall and walked. It was a little cooler inside. We were walking around there, and I noticed a young man that was walking with a young lady, and he had his arm around her, and you could tell that he thought that she was just about the prettiest thing that had ever come to Texas. And we walked on down one way and back and around, and after a while we came by in front of a nutrition food store there, and there was a pair of scales out in front of that store. And I couldn't believe what I saw, because this young man had that pretty little girl on that scale and he was weighing her. Did you ever do that, Jack? Troy, did you ever do that? If Jack and Troy didn't do it, it's unprecedented. And we walked on around and I kept thinking about that. You know, I thought about going back and talk to that young man and tell him now, she's not going to always be like this. I think he ought to have known that. You know, she may not always be this pretty. Pretty has a way of getting old and has a way of getting wrinkled. And sometimes pretty gets a little pudgy. Somebody said, I can't believe you said that. Well, I'm going to tell you, that doesn't happen just to ladies. Suppose Stella had married me only because I was handsome. Don't grin. Suppose she had married me only because I was handsome. Did you know when Stella and I married, I was just as tall then as I am now, and I weighed 165 pounds. But later on, I weighed 200 and put some question marks out there, you know. Now, she would have been real disappointed if she had married me only because I was handsome, wouldn't she? See, things change. Which brings me to tell you, young men and women, you don't select a companion just from outward appearance alone. You need to know that person. And that's what a period of courtship is all about, to develop trust and confidence. And it begets love. And the more that you know about a person, the better equipped that you're going to be to make a decision for the person that you want to spend the rest of your life with. I don't know how many other things I need to mention here today, because some of the things will come out tomorrow, especially for young married couples. But I'd like to close this morning with one more point, and that is, serve all men. I want to teach you little boys and girls, you young men and women, to serve other people. That's going to be one of the greatest traits that you'll ever develop in your life. And you can start right now while you're small. Do things to help your parents. Do things to help your brothers and sisters. And you know what? The first thing you know, you're going to become perhaps the favorite child in that family. Why? Because of the way you serve, not because of your selfish attitude that wants everybody else to serve you. And that's one of the greatest principles that Jesus taught in his life. And he had to teach his disciples that lesson one day, and he had to teach it to them very strongly. And he girded himself about with a towel and began to wash the feet of the disciples. Peter said, "You're not going to wash my feet." He said, "If I don't wash your feet, you're not going to have any part with me." You know, he changed his mind pretty quick, didn't he? He said, "My feet and my hands and my head." Well, he wanted him to wash him all over. I guess so. And that's the principle that every one of us need to learn, child or adult. Serve other people. We had a young lady working for us one time. She was a very outgoing young lady. Had climbed up the ladder of success at a very rapid rate. We hired her in the bank to work summers, even before she was out of high school. As quickly as we could, we hired her to work full time because she was the kind of employee that every employer would want. She'd come to the bank and she'd put in her time during the day and many afternoons when she got out of the bank. Maybe at noon she would have gone home and she would have baked a cake or she would have baked cookies and she'd go by and visit some older couple or maybe a person who lived alone there in town and take them a little gift of food and she would say, "You know, I just had been thinking about you and I thought I'd come by for just a minute." And you know, that might take 5 or 10 minutes of her time. And did you know every person in that little city loved her as their own daughter? Unfortunately, at 24 years of age, I helped with her funeral service because she was killed in a car accident. But I want to tell you, young men and women today, consider other people. You know, there are people of this congregation who live alone. And in your busy schedule, if you could find time just to go by someday and say, "Listen, I was thinking about you, and I wondered how you were feeling. And I just wondered if there was something that I could do for you, an errand that I could run. Could I go get something for you? Is there something you need?" And you might spend all of 5 or 10 minutes. And you might cause a person to be as happy as they had ever been in their life because someone else cared. And it doesn't have to be a member of the church. It could be a friend or a neighbor, some acquaintance of yours. And these are the kind of things that cause you to be an influence, that bring people to the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world. And I'll tell you today, fathers and mothers, grandfathers and grandmothers, we can learn the same lessons. And hopefully these children and young men and women will teach us those very things. Jesus called a little child unto him. He said in the midst of them and said, "Except you be converted and become as little children, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. But whosoever shall humble himself as this little child, the great, same is greatest in the kingdom of God." Children, today we love you and appreciate you because of the examples that you are to us. And I hope that you can expect and demand of us the example and the strength and courage we need to be to you. And young men and women today, I hope that you will accept the advice that has been given you today, and that you'll think of these things, and that your life will be richer and fuller for having been involved. Maybe you've really never dedicated yourself to these things, and if you haven't, you ought to start today. If you're not a Christian, that'd be a good place to start. And resolve in your heart to obey the Lord. If you've been a Christian and you become unfaithful, resolve to return to the shepherd and the bishop of your soul. While we stand to sing the invitation song, would you come?